I feel like we're the same people.
Okay.
Like, just because, like, my, like, what I've learned from, like, history, like, Mayans and Native Americans were both here, like, during the same time. And it's just, like, for myself, I don't care if you're, like, black, white, Native American. If you respect me, I'm gonna respect you. I till this day, like, even I tell my brothers, like, it does not matter what color you are, what religion you are. If they're cool with you, you should be cool with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like discriminating people. I just don't really think as, like, my grandma, she always considers herself Native American.
Right.
And my, like, with Mayan.
Yeah.
My parents never even, like, told me anything about being, like, being against Native Americans. Since my grandma always tells us, you're straight up Indian.
Yeah.
You look Indian. Like, oh, that's just what I grew up with. When I was younger, I thought I was Indian myself. Mm-hmm. Until, like, I actually started learning about my culture. And they're not different. They can be different in some way, but we're the same people.
Yeah. It's a trip, like, when we think about identity and really deconstruct it. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of it isn't based on concepts and ideas that we determine for ourselves.
Yeah.
A lot of it is based on concepts and ideas that were put on us, that yeah. were imposed upon people. So when we think, a lot of people in the United States, we think America means the United States of America. Yeah. But America actually goes all the way from this, like, subarctic region, mm-hmm. right north of Canada, all the way down to the tip of South America.
Yeah.
And when
you were listening to KBOO Portland. That was News from the Boo. And coming up next, we have Right to Survive.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series. Every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, February 18th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen Do the Right Thing, the Spike Lee joint which follows a Brooklyn neighborhood's racial tension on a hot summer day. Again, Do the Right Thing, showing Monday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not my fear.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you. Mike.
Hello, 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 everyone. This is Ibrahim Mubarak, your co-host for Right to Survive Radio, and we have an exciting show today. We have three guests, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and it's always, as usual, about houselessness.
And I'm Lisa Fay. Welcome to another episode of Right to Survive Radio. We're going to be talking about the Enhanced Service District and Compassionate Change District and how they're going to merge in the upcoming months. And next, we have our three guests.
I'm Emily Van W. Gilbert. Thanks for having me.
And what organization or where?
So I'm organizer with Portland DSA, but today I'll just be speaking as a CCD organizer and somebody who's lived in the Central East Side for a long time.
Hi, my name is Catherine. I am an emergency nurse and I work at a local hospital. And I've been told that these views are my own and not those of the hospital I work for.
But that's what mattered most, your own views.
Yes.
And my name is Mark Neres. I lead the Basic Needs and Human Rights Study Group with the Multnomah County Democrats. I'm a precinct committee person for House District 2736, and my views are also my own.
And I would like to give out the number for KBOO if you would like to call in with any questions or concerns for our guest tonight. The phone number is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And we will give the number out again during the broadcast. All right. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's start off by what happened at City Council and passing this enhanced service district.
Okay, you're looking at me. That's great.
Well, I think maybe it might be good to start even a little further back and just talk about what an enhanced service district is.
Please do.
Yeah.
Inquiry minds want to know.
So in some cities, they're called business enhanced service districts. In this city, it was being called an enhanced service district. And basically, it's the way it was being pitched was a gentrification project, more or less, for the industrial part of town in the Central East Side, where fees would be put on property owners and businesses that in turn would pay for beautification projects and enhanced, as the name implies, services that are usually provided for by the city.
And Portland already has two of these, or already had before the addition of this third. So the Downtown Clean and Safe is an enhanced service district, and as is the Lloyd District's Go Lloyd, I believe it's called.
Go Lloyd.
Okay. So, on February 6th, a new district was formed and passed by council, and not without a lot of opposition and talks with the Central East Side Council to do not a traditional business improvement district, but something that would be new and innovative for the city of Portland, and something that hopefully, if it's done correctly, can be mirrored across the country. Do one of you want to talk about how this would not be the traditional business improvement district model that we've all come to see, where it's increased private security, increased policing, privatizing of streets and neighborhoods, and criminalizing and targeting of underrepresented populations like the houseless community?
So the proposal... There are going to be a lot of acronyms today when we're talking. So a counterproposal that was brought to me by Emily, a counterproposal to the Enhanced Service District, which we'll be calling the ESD, is the Compassionate Change District. And the Compassionate Change District seeks to improve material conditions for our houseless community members. In the proposal, there were plans for safe sleep encampments, car encampments, as well as 24-hour access to toilets, waste management, as well as laundry and showers as well. And also, kind of one of the big ways that this differs from the Enhanced Service District as it's been proposed is there's been a shift from emphasis on security to a shift on peer-run and trauma-informed like modes of dealing with security. Emily, do you want to talk more about that?
Sure. I guess you could say that the way that the CCD, or the Compassionate Change District plan, came about was largely because there was a study that came out of UC Berkeley earlier last fall, around the time that we found out that there was going to be a third enhanced service district going in Portland. And that study talked about California's experience with business improvement districts, and the study or the report that they produced, they called houseless exclusion districts, because that's the stark reality. Like, it was undeniable. That's just what happens with traditional business improvement districts. So what we did was engage with the Central Eastside Industrial Council, and we asked questions like, what are the problems that you're looking to solve? Like, what are you trying to get out of a business improvement district or enhanced service district? And we listened to what they said the problem was, the problem statement, by going to their security meetings and just understanding what they were hoping to achieve. And then we presented them with this alternate proposal that actually gets to the root of the problem instead of just papering over it, or as they like to do, like sweep it around. Because if the problem is hygiene and the waste and obstacles everywhere, like, then, you know, we can solve that. That's not something that is rocket science. You know, if you don't want people to sleep on the sidewalk, then give them somewhere to sleep. Like, it's not super complicated. However, it's something that businesses traditionally have seen as outside of their realm of what they get to do or what they are responsible for. But we do think that if you are taking responsibility for our public space, which is sidewalks and streets, then you do have to participate in actual solutions to things and not just try to do the most convenient thing. So we put together a pretty full proposal that had all these different components of what would work better. So I think that was a way to show that it wasn't just that we were opposed to business improvement districts, it's that we actually have ideas for what works better. And a lot of these ideas are things that have been tried here in Portland, as with Right to Dream 2, Dignity Village. We can see that these examples and models work. So all we have to do is convince the business district, right, that they should have one. And I know that we've been down this road before, so I think one of the significant wins from Wednesday was to get them to accept that we should have a safe sleep area in the Central East Side. And I think even Lisa can probably talk about the road there, because it's been long and windy.
And the question I want to ask, why do you think when these bids or these enhanced service districts or the business people want to improve a neighborhood, they always cause harm on low-income people to no-income people, and they don't have them in mind for when they improve? Improving don't mean gentrification or genocide, you know?
Right. I mean, it really comes down to who has a seat at the table. A lot of, or almost all the time, when these types of proposals are brought to the city, houseless people like don't get to offer input. Even renters really didn't get to offer input and their own insights into shaping this proposal as well. There was a door knocking campaign that happened not too long ago, maybe last month, where Portland Metro People's Coalition knocked on maybe 300 resident and business doors. They found less than 10% of the people in this community were even aware that it was happening at all.
So how, when we've heard that the CEIC sent out mailers, they knocked on doors, they talked to people, 2,300 people, I believe, was their
Claim.
Why do you think that when the coalition knocked on doors that they found that this was not true, that this did not happen, or that they were not aware?
Sure. Well, the letters of notice didn't go out to everyone in the district. There were, I believe, letters that were sent out to property and business owners, and the ESD is written almost exclusively with them in mind. It even explicitly says it in the language of the proposal. So renters really didn't know that this was going on unless they were really on top of the ball.
Okay, 503-231-8187 is the call-in number. If you have any questions or answers or you just want to hear yourself on the radio, do call us. We're going to a musical break right now. Thank you much.
Somebody help me. That's work. This is not my oh, man. I am not my fear. What I do, have the power to break the chains. Doing what's right, you.
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. I would like to redirect the questioning a little bit and talk about sweeps and the impact of sweeps on the houseless community and the role that business improvement districts with their private security has. We have a guest here that could talk a little bit about the trauma and how the health facilities like hospitals see an increase of people that are houseless after a sweep takes place.
I could speak to how the emergency room, how it affects patients in the emergency room. And So as a nurse, we can tell usually when they are doing the sweeps. We have an influx of patients related to them. Many are coming in on warrants with officers and in handcuffs, usually low-level warrants. Most often times the officer will stay with the patient for just long enough to see how long the workup will be, and then usually these are patients that come in with very dangerous situations, and they usually will need to be watched overnight. Most often when the officers find out that is going to happen, they will then cite the person and leave. So when the patient finds out that they are not under arrest, they don't need to be they probably usually should stay in the hospital, but yeah. They usually leave AMA against medical advice. So I really don't know what happens when they leave the department. There's a number of things that could happen.
So what you're saying is that most of the hospital, or at least your emergency room, can tell when houseless people have been swept because they get sick, or they hurt, or they come in because they have no place, anxiety, they trauma infused, and they don't have nowhere to go. So, we would like to see those statistics on the emergency room getting full when sweeps happen, so we can know the impact it have on the hospital and the impact it have on the human itself.
And I'd like to continue this conversation. However, we have two callers on the line. Can we go to our first caller? Caller? Okay, can we go to our second caller? Okay, I guess our callers have hung up on us. Oh, okay. That's okay. So touching base a little bit more on the people that come to the emergency room? Do you see that there's a lack of trauma-informed care prior to coming into the emergency room for services, where people are coming in with shock or disillusion, panic, fear of the unknown?
And what are their needs? Are they pneumonia or the flu?
Yes.
Are they? Because yes, I know a couple, some people get their amputated because they mm-hmm. get frostbite. So can you so elaborate
this past,
on that?
Yeah, this past sweep was done right before the inclement weather warning mm-hmm. came out. We did end up pulling a few people out of cars that were extremely cold, in very bad shape. And they drove because they didn't have anywhere else to go. There are also some people that come in with all of their belongings, whatever they could pack up before they had to leave. They have nowhere to go, so often it's a chance for them to check in and get some services they haven't had in a little while.
So really, the city don't know that they're imposing the invisible genocide on people, how when they take their stuff and leave them out in the cold, they die. Mm-hmm. Or something happens to mm-hmm. them. So how can we get this out to the public or the city council for the police to stop these sweeps? I can't cuss, so you can put that in there.
Okay, caller, what is your name and what is your question? Oh, caller, are you there?
I can barely hear.
I'm sorry, could you talk closer to your phone?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, maybe I'm just shy, that's all.
We can hear you, not see you. Don't worry.
That's okay. They can't see you out there.
So, first of all, I wanted to just say, as one of the people, one of, I'm sure, the many people who was asked to write to City Council about this, and I did do that, urging them to adopt the compassionate change protocol. I am so impressed about what I just heard now about how you went about persuading the business community, which normally would have steamrolled right over everything, of course. You went and listened to their problems, their complaints, their fears, their objections. I thought that was profound because they probably felt listened to. And then you addressed the very things that they were concerned about. And then they were, I bet they were amazed to find out that you had some really viable solutions to their problems. So anyway, it's about congratulations. I think it's amazing, but I would like to know if you will have time on the program to tell us something about how the whole organizing thing came about. I'd love to know that. I mean, that's a huge effort. How many people were involved, and were lots of houseless people involved, or just a few, and how long did it take, and all that sort of thing. And the next question that I have is the one that I think Ibrahim just said. What is the deal? How do we stop these sweeps? This is the most inhumane thing ever. And is it actually legal still for them to come and do that, and to take everything that the people own and turn them out?
It seems like when a housed person become houseless, they have no rights, and then people think they senseless. And it's a good thing we don't have Nurse Ratched here, but we have our own nurse telling us about what's happening, because the public need to know this, you know. And so this is the way we come together when people are tired of humans being treated like that. So I can let the nurse, I don't know if she wants her name to be on, I call her the nurse, to talk, and I can let Emily talk, because I believe this was Emily. She lived in that community, and she was frustrated, and she came to Right to Survive and a lot of organizations. So I let them do the talk.
Yeah. Thank you.
I could talk a little bit about the organizing background. Mm-hmm. So I lived on the Central East Side for way longer than a lot of other people. There's been rapid growth, but one thing that I remember specifically is last time Right to Survive almost got a space, a safe sleep area in the Central East Side. And that was, you know, it was a few years back, and I think that the housing crisis was already there, of course, houselessness already there, of course. But I do think that there's been a little bit of a change in how people view houselessness, and I think back then there was, I remember the neighborhood being a little more split, like, compared to now, because now I think that I have very few neighbors anymore that think that a safe sleep area is not a good idea. I think that everybody's pretty much consensus is, you know, like, oh yeah, we absolutely should have this. This is great. But because I remember why we didn't have it from that last time around, that it made it, you know, it made it sting a little bit that they would say, oh, we're going to have security now, when they had the option to have a safe sleep area and they turned it down. Mm-hmm. So there was that sense in the community already, in the area, that this is the wrong solution that they're proposing. And because of that history, it was easy to reach out to Right to Survive and all these other organizations. And once we had the houseless community to speak for themselves and to say that this is not the solutions, this is not what we need in order to be the kind of neighbors that everybody wants to be together in this neighborhood, then I think that the building the coalition was actually not hard. It was something that most people who saw the proposal and sort of heard it from the houseless community themselves, like, could see that this makes total sense.
Yeah, I really encourage anyone who hasn't read the Compassionate Change District proposal to go on the website. What's the website?
CCDPDX.org.
Like, Emily and Sandra from Right to Survive, they brought forward this proposal to my working group with the county Democrats, and it's so strong on its merits. Just everything is so well researched and thought out, and it relies really heavily on proven case studies, and it's just, as the name implies, compassionate. There's so much in it that makes solid sense. When I worked on a resolution to get the county Democrats to endorse it, we brought it before the Central Committee, where maybe 80 to 100 precinct committee people had the vote. And within a 13-minute presentation, this thing passed unanimously. I mean, it's rock solid. So it was very easy to get on board. And then the other thing is that a lot of us, we've been in each other's orbits in terms of organizations. And if you're involved in this type of work for long enough, you get to know who your allies are, and it's also just great to see this network continue to get stronger and build trust and generate love and just continue to advocate in the best way possible.
And it took many months of organizing and planning to put the Compassionate Change District together and do our research to come up with what we felt would be the best possible proposal to propose for the city.
And support from city commissioners, that was crucial. I doubt that we would have had the success we did if we did not have Joanne Hardesty, Chloe Daly, and Amanda Fritz advocating on our behalf.
Exactly.
This is the century of the women, y'all. I keep telling you.
And speaking of women, we have a caller on the line. Emily, go ahead. Welcome.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. How are you, and what's your question?
Okay, I'm good. This is Crystal. I think also congratulations in order to you all. Amazing, an uphill battle, and you've been so patient and you work so hard and you've had these great ideas since day one, but you have to wait, like you said, until there's like a major shift that goes on for the city hall at least to open up. I wanted to say that, you know, it's not like I have a long institutional memory, but this is all kind of new. And I remember around 2006 when I was living and working in that area, it was still a neighborhood associations, and they started the Central East Side. I went to some of those meetings and they were very business oriented, mm-hmm. and it became like a template for other so-called neighborhood associations around that time. What they were doing was different, is they wanted to push the homelessness and the security issues were coming up around that time, and you started to see more private security and like public spaces, but then private businesses, and it was just all over town, and there were already activists that had ideas to help the homeless, like Washington High School. That was,
yes,
going on.
I
there
was
St. Francis.
That was our first action.
Red and Black Cafe, and I was in
Red and Black. Yippee.
Yeah, so we had these ideas, and then I was at Laughing Horse Books one day, and I was in the office, and there was a white guy working behind the counter that day, and I guess the person who came in talked about outreach from the CEIC. I can't remember who was ahead of it at that time, but I guess he went ahead and hired people to go around, I guess, as security guards. I think it was Portland Patrol Services at the time.
Yes.
Who now got the contract with TriMet. I don't know why they're still around, because they're still as horrible as ever. They came in and said, you're going to be happy to hear that we're going to sweep up all these homeless. This is 2006, 2007, when it wasn't anything like today. And we were like, no, you need to be coming to our meetings, because we're talking about ideas the city should implement. And Amanda Fritz had just been elected, and she said to me on a day when I had the recorder plugged into the floor during the break at
sneaky,
City
sneaky.
Hall. Yeah. She said, we can't let the sit lie ordinance and the anti-camping
exactly.
laws sunset, because the Portland Business Alliance told us we can't, and they're the only ones with the ideas. And I'm like, open your eyes, there's so many ideas out there. Why does the PBA, which I guess changed their name,
that's good you bring up the sit and lie on this, because mm-hmm. I was at those meetings, and what we found out, and then we're going to go back to the nurse, because I'm still curious on what happens in that emergency room. What I found out that you're obstructing a walkway, and you can't stop people from walking on the sidewalk, so they came up, you had to be, I think, 5 feet from the curb and 8 feet from the wall. And so when these businesses start putting a A-frame outside, and you have to walk around them or step in the street,
sidewalk,
or a group of businessmen stand in the middle of the sidewalk, you have to say, excuse me, can I get past? And they look at you like you're crazy. And so the response for a business to call on a houseless person because they're obstructing the sidewalk is 5 minutes. When we call on the A-frame being out and obstructing the sidewalk, it was 5 days. You make the call and tell me what that is. So we want to go back to our next speaker, the nurse, if you don't mind, we call her the nurse, and tell her, how does this the sweeps of multitude of ad hoc camps and people living on the street affect the emergency room?
Well, so I want to talk about like the two issues I heard at City Hall that mm-hmm. came up. And I heard like two different diverging concerns. And one from people was the houselessness, concerned about people having housing, which has actually been proven to connect people to services and lower medical costs. The other concern that I heard from people were their fear of the drug use, which I was reading about some safe injection site places that they have in Canada that are monitored by nurses, and they have also been proven to decrease medical costs. So we have all of these people coming in for community services, which an ER is not. We do our best, and we have amazing social workers and amazing doctors and nurses, but you know, we're made to help you when you're having a heart attack or a psychiatric crisis or a stroke, and to be the community solution to all things psychosocial is it's a lot. So when these sweeps happen, we get such an influx that our rooms fill up very quickly, and then you have other people waiting that are just as dire straits as they are, and you end up having to do all of their medical workups in the lobby, which is not ideal. Mm-hmm. So it really does affect us and our patients. Oftentimes, my patients tell me that they're on lists for shelters, they're on lists for homes, they're on lists for drug treatment. They would love to have any of that assistance and show their autonomy and their humanity, and they're just waiting. They're waiting eternally, it seems like. And so in terms of money, which it seems like a business district would be... they would like to see the money return to the community. Hospital costs.
Yes.
Hospital costs are huge. Healthcare, I mean, who pays for those? They get passed on to everyone who goes to the doctor, anyone that has any medical need, because all of these people have nowhere to get the care that they need.
Exactly.
They have places, but those places are full, and there's not enough.
So I think what you just said is a very key component. When people are in favor of more private security, more policing, more... Crystal, we'll get back to you in just a second. We haven't forgot about you. But I just want to make this point that when we're talking about... criminalizing houseless people and hiring more private security for areas and more police officers and having more arrests and more sweeps, and people are turning up in emergency rooms and they are dependent on Oregon Health Plan to take care of the cost, it comes back on the taxpayers. It comes back on the same people that are advocating to do more to punish or eliminate the houseless people from their areas as the solution to solving the houseless crisis. And they're not really thinking about that. Yes, I want these people gone. Yes, I want these people out of here. Oh, woe is me. I don't have sympathy. And yet they're the same people that are complaining that my health care costs are going up. I have to pay more health care this year. I have to pay more taxes for having my business or my property. I have more costs that I keep incurring. Well, if they would start working on solutions like the Compassionate Change District and forcing our city governments and county governments to build more housing and more infrastructure around keeping people housed, then they would not be incurring a lot of the costs that they're incurring. Crystal, did you want to say anything else?
Oh, thanks. I mean, I do have a question. Because I was saying that it's just really, it's amazing how long you've held out and work hard on this without giving up. I think the CEIC, they're thinking at the time when they did the outreach and told people they got security, they never really did. I think there was a backlash. And now they're just waited till some new crop of people who forget what community is about around here. So I think that they're pushing it, and they haven't foreseen that you guys are better known with the city. It's been difficult with the city as well, but it is
things are changing. So my question is, I mean, I know you that this has been implemented in other cities as well. I know I ran into you in Tucson. So how, now that security is everywhere and you've tried to explain why D4S and Portland patrol services are so bad, I don't know, and now we've gotten rid of JTTF, thank God. It's just like we fight for these things over and over and over, and the city, they just keep, you just have to keep fighting for it. Now I forgot what my question was, but how do you do it? What is your, do you have your plan in other cities too?
Well, can I maybe answer, because there was another question that was asked earlier, and I think it's an important one, which was how do you stop the sweeps? And I think that comes through consciousness building. That comes through talking to your friends, talking to your neighbors, talking to people that you can't stand, and like really laying out the issues for like why sweeps are a problem, and also really important, getting people to stop calling police officers during non-emergencies.
Call 211.
Yeah.
211's a good one to call.
Personally, 211.
And also, you can go to your neighborhood associations that make decisions, and you all can talk about this. And if need be, this collaboration of organization of groups and Right to Survive, we can come and sit in on your meetings and show you statistics and details what happened when business improvement did improve your neighborhood, and forget about the low-income people and forget about the houseless people and what happens to them. You know, you never think about the afterbirth effect. You come up with a plan, and after it's born, what happens? You don't have that in your equation. People need to start putting what happened to humans. It's okay to make your neighborhood look good, but keep the same people. Don't force trauma on people. So we're going to go to a musical break now, and we'll be back with our three important guests. Thank you much. Thank you. Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio. And our topic is Enhanced Service District, in parentheses, Business Improvement District. So we're coming back to our guest. And the question is that what the CCD wants and what we receive at Victories.
Well, we wanted a lot.
Yeah.
compared to what an enhanced service district traditionally is, we wanted the opposite, which I understand that, like, you know, when you go to negotiate, you want everything, and then you come out with some things that you like and some things that you don't like. But I think what we came out with was a good first step.
Yeah.
It's something that we can build on. So I think the probably the most important win was to get people with lived experience of houselessness onto the board mm-hmm. of the ESD. We have 3, I think, board seats mm-hmm. reserved. So that already there, that's huge. That's something that no other business improvement district or enhanced service district in the rest of the nation has, like, I guarantee you. I think another important thing was a process for actually, I'm not even going to go into this, too many acronyms, but RFPs, request for proposals, and all these kind of, like, the way that you acquire contractors for the different components of your of your program.
Yeah.
That got expanded to make it a little bit easier for grassroots organizations to apply to do different things.
Yeah. It's a foot in the door for the advocacy community. And also a step in the right direction in terms of like democratic governance and oversight as well, because that's one of the things that's typically missing when an enhanced service district or a business enhanced district is proposed. Decisions tend to be made behind closed doors,
mm-hmm.
And in a very top-down structure that's mirrored throughout the business community.
So I think especially for the security component, which is still present, the private security is still there and mm-hmm. functioning. That's going to have some more oversight. There's some more protocols for transparency, and there's a situational protocol that was added by UDaily's office that's going to be very important in making sure that the private security only calls police for very specific situations, because we want to make sure that we lessen the contact and the interaction between the houseless community and the police as much as we can. So making sure that the private security does not function as some sort of facilitator for those connections, but something that can buffer would be better. And I also think that the guarantee to partner with the city in finding a safe sleep area is going to be huge, because it's one of the things that we've been pushing for, is that you actually have to like provide solutions, and a safe sleep area is a solution. And I think once we have that in place, it's going to be easier for the business community to see the value in providing solutions and not just sweeping the problem under the rug. And I think we can build a lot further yeah. from there.
And what about there was talk and there was some language around peer-based or peer-ran. What does that mean, and in what areas will peers, and I'm assuming these are houseless peers or grassroots organizations that work with the houseless community, how does peer ran or peer based factor into the ESD?
So I would turn that question back over to you two, because Right to Survive is a peer run organization, right?
Well, people get confused when they say peer based. That means anybody can have a peer base of people. And it can be the traditional social service, since this is what we're talking about. It can be the traditional police department or business enhancement services. But when peer ran operated, we talking about people taking care of themselves, because they know how to take care of themselves without any type of dictatorship, without waiting in long lines, without getting sick, with leaving their stuff down. Because we know what we go through, and we know what it's going to take for us to get quote-unquote productive or successful again. So we rather see a tiny house village that's operated and ran by the houseless community themselves, instead of traditional social services, because they really don't have no inkling what people go through out on the streets. And that's who we need to be standing up and voicing their opinion on how they're being treated. Because if they don't step up like we just did in this enhanced service district, people won't know. And that's the best thing to do, is to have awareness out there. So peer-based can be anything. Peer-operated is people themselves taking care of themselves.
And this district is a little bit different, because we're asking that the private security have training in trauma-informed care. Mm-hmm. How is that different, and how would we like it to look as it unfolds? Anyone?
I think I think this is a big step forward, but I think who set precedence first was Montevilla Neighborhood Association when they stood up for the houseless community and said no more sweeps, because they realized what it was doing to people. And this, and you know, every beginning has a start, and I believe that was the start. And now the East and Central East Side industrial community is aware of that, and they kind of greeted to it. So it looks like this country is pulling themselves, well, this city is pulling themselves together to work with everybody, because that's what we need. Everybody live in this city, so why can't everybody dictate on what happens to their life, where they can come to some type of common cause? The business people want to run this city and this state like business, is just like the president. He's a businessman, so he's running this country like a businessman. Like, you're fired. I don't like it. You're fired. Don't come around me. You're fired. And they're doing all kinds of nonsense in the White House. So we got to give things back to the public, and that means housed and unhoused people, black and brown people, white people, tall people, short people, Muslim, Christian. Everybody needs to be at the table when it comes to life.
Okay, I have a question about some of the services that we want to see implemented. Mm-hmm. The ESD has innovation fund that is supposed to a marginal fund that is supposed to supply funds for certain services that we would like to see, that is in the compassionate change proposal. Services for hygiene, like mobile showers, laundry trucks, more access to public restrooms around the district. How do we see us moving forward in making sure that some of these programs are implemented and that we can hold them accountable to making sure that once they're implemented, funds keep finding funds that can keep...
So they're sustaining.
Yes.
And since you spoke up, you can answer the question first.
I'm really grateful for how much the city council has been willing to meet with us and mediate negotiations.
Yes. Yeah.
But in order for us to really lock these programs down, we're gonna need to lock down language in writing, in policy, and I hope that comes through the negotiation processes over the next couple of months, because really we're in a housing emergency. I mean, it's always been bad, but it's only getting worse.
Yeah.
And so I really hope that everyone can act with some clarity and urgency on this, and that we can get the legal language to back our proposals so that it just has to happen.
In terms of making things sustainable over time, I mean, it's a good question. Like, we don't know how that's going to work. We do what we do, which is organize the grassroots, right? Like, to bring pressure. That's all we can do, really. So I'm looking forward to keep doing that. In terms of what you just said, that we just have to act with some clarity and urgency, I think that that's exactly right. And I also want people to look at the Compassionate Change District proposal. And if you don't live in the Central East Side, I think that you should think about it and see how it applies to your community and your neighborhood where
exactly.
it lives.
Exactly.
Because nothing gets solved in just one place. Like, this has to be a collective solution, problem-solving process, right? Like, for all of Portland, for this to work. And there are components that you can do wherever you live. So just, you know, pick something, come up with a good idea, or come up with something brand new and write it in on the contact form. We'll see if we can make it happen.
Yeah, let's hear from Nurse Cat. I got her name right, so. Cat.
I just challenge everyone to go Google trauma-informed care. It's really the way we need to be treating everyone at this time. You know, it's proven that the cure for houselessness is homes.
Exactly.
That if you want people to have the support to stop using drugs, which are two separate issues, I'm not trying to blend the two, but that they need support from their peers, they need community, and they need medical care. And we just don't have enough of any of that. The whole, so City Council said that, I just want to address the whole sweeps issue again. They assured me twice that no one would be moved. I have a hard time believing that just because any sort of even peer policing or whatnot will end up with people being moved. But the trauma that it caused, that people feel when they see a uniform or they see someone that in the past has
exactly
hurt them, whether that person intended to or not, it really just shuts down any kind of progress. And so the people that know the most about houseless communities are those that are houseless. So why are we not listening to them? Right to Survive has had success in this area. Let's listen to the people that have been successful, and let's use evidence-based practice instead of just talking about it. So I think that the challenge to everyone out there, and if you're not in the medical community, is start learning about trauma-informed care. It is what works, and it is something that you can advocate for in your neighborhood.
Perfect. Everybody have a can go take a shower. Everybody can go wash their clothes. Mm-hmm. Everybody can use the washroom. Everybody can go to the refrigerator and cook what they want to cook. And everybody can sleep in a wet, dry, warm place. Mm-hmm. So how do we expect houseless people to act if these things are snatched away from them? So we're going to go do a round table. We have 4 minutes left. And have the, I guess, Mark, Kat, and Emily answer these questions.
Mm-hmm. Or say whatever you'd like about the Compassionate Change or the ESD. And one last shout out from me. I'd like to thank the City Council for adopting the language of the Compassionate Change District. Even though we didn't get everything we want, we this is a step, an innovative step forward.
Thank you, City Council.
For all that's great about the Compassionate Change District, and there's a lot that's great in this proposal, it's still just a stopgap. And it's can only be a stopgap until we recognize housing as a human right.
Yeah.
And that needs to be the framework that we operate in, because so long as we're just giving concessions and putting band-aids on these issues, and we're not looking at housing as means to survival, means to existence, if we continue to treat housing and all the things that come with it as commodities, we're gonna keep running into the same issues. So there needs to be a reframing that goes along with this as well, if we're to come up with a sustainable and permanent solution, fix.
Nurse K.
So I just want to leave you with, you know, when people can't meet their Maslow's basic needs, how do we expect them to pay fines and thousands of dollars in ER bills? It's just not realistic. So let's start trying something that's actually going to work. Also, as you were speaking to belongings, when you take everything that they have, how do you, they need those things again. How do you expect them to get them? I know the city was saying that they were going to be holding things for a certain amount of time. Huh. I'm not sure who does that, or if that's even someone that they would trust to go to get their belongings back, or exactly. How they would know how to do that. So there's a lot of like band-aids, stopgaps put into place that aren't working, and they're not designed by the people that know how it should work. So I just want to remind you to look up trauma-informed care and talk to your neighbors, and let's start addressing the issues at their root instead of trying to slap band-aids on them that clearly are not working.
Exactly. And while we're on the medical part, I just want to add things that we forget about pregnant, houseless women. Mm-hmm. Some of them are afraid to go to the hospital because they mm-hmm. get their baby taken away from mm-hmm. them. And we need to stop doing that. They don't mean they're bad parents. They're just in a bad situation. Okay, Emily.
Yeah, I kind of want to echo what was said already, which is, and just to remind people that here we are again in this process where we're essentially fighting over crumbs. It's like we're all these different people around the table saying, like, no, you pay for a trash can. No, you pay for it. No, you pay for it. I mean, it's ridiculous. Portland is not a poor city.
Not at all.
There is wealth here. This is probably the most prosperous time in history. And here we are fighting over what, you know, like public bathrooms. This is something that shouldn't be that hard, right? So I don't know. I'll leave you with what I think the solution is, and it's to tax the rich.
Tax the rich.
Tax the rich.
And the question I have that people always ask me, why are people afraid of houseless people? Think about that, listen to the audience, and come up with the answer and contact KBOO, and I'm sure it'll be on someone's radio show.
And I want to thank everyone and all our guests tonight and our listeners and our callers. Right to Survive has a meeting tomorrow at Join. That is 1435 Northeast 81st Avenue from 5 to 7 p.m. If you'd like to come and see us in action. And I also want to thank our guest and all the work that was put into the Compassionate Change District and the many, many people and hours that got us to this point.
Thank you, everyone.